Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. Informed, intelligent, irreverent, political persuasions with Mike O'Mara and Chris Frakes. And now, here's Mike.
Welcome to episode number 6 of Political Persuasions. Mike O'Mara along with Chris Frakes. And, you know, we're actually live streaming the audio of today's program, which is very, very exciting, where people can actually jump in and hear us. Did they hear my full-fledged meltdown before the show when I thought it was, when Rob and I actually thought it was a video streaming, but it was audio, and Pony said, no, it's audio, and he knew, and I thought he was wrong, and I yelled at Pony, and then Pony was right, because Oscar said we're streaming the audio and not the video. Chris, you got a chance to see what these guys have dealt with for 73 years now, actually, on the program.
It's like walking into Thanksgiving dinner. Somebody else's family.
That's exactly what it is. It is. Yeah. They actually have to pretend to be concerned about those meltdowns because they've heard them so many times that if they have to show some amount of discomfort when there's really no discomfort because they know it's over as soon as it begins.
Dealing with the talent again, man. It's rough.
I was. We were just tweaking, but the fact is that it's a little something new.
It's something
as we
new.
Continue to grow our listenership. And by the way, you are listening to this show. You need to listen more. You need to listen harder. You need to tell your friends about Political Persuasions. But I'm thrilled with the results so far of what we're doing. We're going to continue to do it. If you're willing, I'm willing.
Yeah,
Chris.
Man. It's been a ton of fun. We get a lot of feedback from folks, and the downloads keep coming. You know, listen to it once, listen to it twice. Listen to it 3 times. I mean, does it really ever get old? No, because we keep
never it does. Never does. And last week's episode, when you were talking about behind the scenes, I really I come into this environment as someone who has a background in silly radio stuff, and I've always been a political junkie. Chris comes to this with much more significant credentials. He has been in the belly of the beast. He has been in the White House. He has covered this stuff. And, you know, we both agreed when we first started doing this show that these are interesting times. And I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it. It's truly every single day covering the world of politics now. It's stunning to me.
And you know how I measure that we're resonating here, Mike, is even my wife is listening. And she pays no attention to anything I do. Like, I
Hello,
remember
Mrs. Freights. Does she use Freights?
No, she does not.
Has she done the proper 50s thing of
no,
taking your last
not.
Name?
She has retained her maiden name because she's an independent woman. But we've been together.
This
since,
is not a common law marriage.
No, we're officially married.
You're a real couple.
We're a real couple.
How long? I love it when we get into the ABCs of you. How long have you been married?
We've been married 10 years now. We've been together. This will be our 18th year together. We started dating in college, right? So I was writing for the college paper, and she was like, "Oh, it's so cool to see your byline on the campus daily. Like, I'm never gonna stop reading your stuff." Yeah, right. Like, she like quit that. Like, I'd be on CNN, and she'd be like, "Oh, were you on today?" And I'm like, "Oh man." So the fact, you know, I have a radio show, I do all this stuff. The fact she listens to our podcast, and she actually said to me the other day, she said, "You know, the last podcast, that was the best one. That was really interesting." I said, "You were interested?"
It was. And like, it was your part that was interesting because you talked about belly scamming, or what's that term you used? grease monkeying. What was it? It was beat greasing. That's what it is. Well, Chris, here's the thing. Another thing we have in common. I've been married over 18 years as well.
Okay.
Only to 3 different women.
You know, variety is the spice of life.
That's it. My Mrs. O'Mara and I, this is the longest relationship that I've had. This is number 3, and we've been together 14 years.
Oh,
14
that's,
years.
Well, that's legit. Yeah.
Have I passed the threshold?
I feel like anything after a decade is just kind of like, yeah, that's a thing.
It's wonderful. It's exciting. And last week's show was really something where we learned about how the process works as far as the author of Fire and Fury getting behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. This week, We must lead with something that is probably a tad tabloidy, and that, of course, is, well, you put it best, Chris, when you said Stormy Weather, the relationship
Stormy
with the
weather.
The president and porn star Stormy Daniels, a story I'm sure... little musical accompaniment from Mr. Rob Spiewak for Stormy. A story that in any other administration, historically, would... not only be top of mind for months, but would potentially bring down an administration. However, in the Trump era, we call this Thursday. It's just not right.
I mean, it stuns me
that it's not getting. I mean, it's there. It is, and people are like, "Okay, he's Donald Trump." So Donald Trump, the rules don't. He's right. He could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and they'd still vote for him. He could. It's the truth. He knew that. He was smart enough to know that. That Cheeto dipped dude. I swear to God, it's stunning. That's a, I'm trying to be as kind as I can here. I am just...
Mike O'Mara kind, everyone.
But Chris, I am in the same camp. I hear this story and I react like probably the majority of the country. Oh, wow, that kookula. That crazy guy paying off a porn star that he had sex with. It's there's no traction for it as far as anything that's going to really amount to anything. Wouldn't you agree?
I think that it just compounds the narrative, right? Because it becomes one of these things where it's just another data point for his opponents. And one of the things that was so fascinating to me, Mike, and of course, you know, just a little synopsis for our listeners who maybe haven't been following the Stormy Storm, which is essentially Michael Cohen, who is Donald Trump's personal lawyer, paid Stormy Daniels, a adult film star, $130,000 about a month before the election, not to talk about the relationship that she had with Donald Trump. There were all kinds of news organizations sniffing around. ABC was on it. Slate was on it. A number of other, the Daily Beast was on it. People were trying to break the story. She had been talking with some reporters. Then she apparently signed this NDA. She was paid. And the Journal just broke the story that she was, in fact, paid for her silence. She has, and Donald Trump has, said that there was no relationship. They have tried to discredit that storyline. My question, of course, is why do you pay somebody six figures if there's nothing to say? But more than that, here we have a president who continues to talk about fake news, fake news, fake news. Look at the facts here. The media, the mainstream media, was onto what would have been one of the juiciest stories right on the heels of the Access Hollywood grabbing the hoo-hoo story. And then you have journalism happen. These guys couldn't prove that there was a relationship. They had, some of them had talked to Stormy Daniels, but they didn't have other collaboration about this relationship. They didn't run the story because they didn't think they had it. So they don't run it before the election. Donald Trump is elected president. We get the story almost a year later.
Do you think that if it had been run, that it could have resulted? I suppose with as close as the election was, that could have happened, but I look at the, you know, when he survived the Billy Bush incident with Access Hollywood, who's to say he wouldn't, because it would be the same drill we're going through now. It would be the same deny, deny. It would be the same fake news. And what did he do? Last night came out with the fake news awards. This is maybe related, but maybe it's not. And we'll get back to what we're talking about, which is the Stormy Daniels incident. But I find myself now reacting like a lot of people in America. I find myself getting angrier at Senator Tom Cotton when he comes out and denies that the president used the word that that the president was bragging about using, more than I get mad at the president. Because now the more someone sees violence, we become conditioned to it. We become desensitized. I'm desensitized to Donald Trump's BS now. So nothing surprises me. No denial surprises me. What makes me angry is when I see culpability on the part of certain Republican senators, congressmen, even the flacks that come out And so with this, first of all, we can't look back and know whether he would have survived it or not. But at this juncture, we're sitting here with Donald Trump had sex with a porn star. There it is. They deny it. The media says it's true. There's a previous interview she did where she talked about it. But it doesn't matter. It literally does not. It will not affect this administration. It won't. Do you think it would? And you said other than the fact that it will cement the reputation that this administration has, I just think it's going to be, I think ultimately this story is going to be on and gone.
I don't disagree that it will, it might not have the legs that it would have had under another administration. But getting back to your question about would have changed the narrative before the election, quite possibly it could have. I mean, the Clinton email story, the Clinton campaign will tell you, changed the election, and they thought turned votes against her when FBI Director James Comey said he was reopening the investigation a couple of weeks before the election. So you never know what kind of story could have impact. That's a huge story. It would have been enormous. Think about, I mean, I was live when the... I was live like all day on CNN when the Access Hollywood tape came out. I imagine there would be the same kind of saturation coverage when that happened. They could have,
but it's not now. And wouldn't you think a sitting president that the story now would be live all day? It's a footnote. I'm watching the coverage of it. There's more to the S-hole story than there is to the Stormy Daniels story. Well, and I really haven't, you know what the weird thing about it? I haven't even, it hasn't bothered me because I'm conditioned to it too. Well, that's just Donald. That's Donald. Yeah. You know, go to a golf tournament. Hey, porn stars, come up to the hotel room. It's just acceptable. It's because it's him. And I'm guilty just like everybody else. I don't think it's that big a deal. I'm stunned at this when I talk to you about it, but otherwise I'm like, okay, yeah, he had that relationship. Wouldn't you think that in this day and age that it would be round the clock coverage of this particular situation?
Well,
and yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I think it gets to the point that there are even bigger stories than this under Donald Trump. I think that is the difference, Mike. Not that necessarily we've become desensitized, which to some extent I think we have, but a sex scandal seems to be lower on the priority than Donald Trump has said something that much of the country thinks is racist. And do we have a racist president who wants to only let white people into the country and not people of color? That ends up being a much bigger story, rightly so, particularly when you're talking about, you know, Donald Trump and his history. You know, he was three marriages. He was a serial philanderer. Like, all of those things were in the tabloids for years. Here we have proof that, oh, he slept with somebody right after he married Melania sometime around Barron's birth. Okay, well, that's not very nice, but we're not surprised. But he is maybe trying to keep people of color out of the country. Maybe we should talk about that. So Chris, I do think that ends up being a bigger story.
I get it. Let me, and I don't, I try, believe me, I try. I know you're the voice of reason on this program, and I tend to get a little hot under the collar.
I love when you get all spun up.
Well, I am now, and probably more than any episode of Political Persuasions that we have done, I'm going to get perhaps just a tad overly dramatic, but I don't think so. Because I think what we are witnessing with all of this stuff, and it's just steady. They used to talk about the drip, drip, drip of information coming out on the Clintons. Let me tell you about the wearing out of decency in America. It is eroding. The decency of this administration. And when you talk about racism, and when you talk about a sordid affair with a porn star right around the time of your son's birth, you're talking about just this erosion of decency and the, you know, I can throw the lying part in. I can throw the bullying part in. I can throw the lack of the respect for the office where you will read even the simplest of memorandums that come into the White House. This is this erosion of so many things that I believe everybody in this country has held dear. And it's just this guy. And,
yeah,
and I don't get it. I don't get all the policy in the world. Where does it come from? Does it come from the hatred of people that don't look like us? Because I think maybe it comes from that. But there is no accountability on this guy. And it goes on and on. And I feel that nationally, the fabric of our society seems to be being affected by this. The racists seem to be coming out of their dark holes. And we, you know, every other week we've got somebody else with a racial incident. Most recently, the girl from Alabama. I'm sorry, I'm ranting now, but I just have to vent because I'm like, where does this end? What is become? We are becoming desensitized to just how crappy things are right now. It's terrible.
So a couple thoughts on that.
See, he just takes a deep breath and he goes, "You're calm. All right, I understand what you do." So, thank you.
It's my
that
thing.
Was one of my big ones. I'm sorry.
No, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it because I do think there are people who feel as you do, and I think there is reason to, and I think that it is troublesome that we are seeing a surge in white nationalism, and the Richard Spencers of the world are getting a bigger stage, and people are able to be much more open with their racism and their bigotry. I think that is problematic. But I also wonder, you know, I don't put this all on Donald Trump. Donald Trump didn't get elected in a vacuum. And when you talk about the coarsening of our society and our culture, I mean, you can go all the way back. Well, not that far. I mean, you go back to the Clinton White House. Here's a guy who was taking advantage of the Oval Office to have sex with interns and cheapen the Oval Office. There's a Democrat. You know, we were talking about all kinds of sordid things. I remember being a kid and reading the Ken Starr report and thinking, good God, like this isn't a newspaper. So I think it goes all the way back. And the fact is we've become, you know, our entertainment, you know, started with reality television in 2000, and then it started to bleed into our politics, I would say, as early as Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin ran for vice president with John McCain. Then she got her own reality TV show in Alaska. Donald Trump just went the other way of a path that she happened to help tread.
I think when you're going to put any kind of equivalency on Bill Clinton and Donald Trump, I have to jump in with, and I won't even, I'll throw out the race thing.
Okay.
All right. Which Bill Clinton was never accused of racism.
No, he was in fact called the first black president because
he was a champion of minorities in this country.
Sure.
And he was. I'll throw that out. I won't even include that. Here's where I get down to it. All right. Let's say they're both horn doggies. Okay. Let's say that they both, that we can put these guys on an equal playing field when it comes to their
hound
proclivity
dogs
for sexual misbehavior. What I don't like is when I hear this guy doesn't read. This guy does not pay attention to policy. This guy, even Ronald Reagan, who was accused of the same type of stuff, was more engaged. I think it's a combo. I think we have never had this particular combination. I think we've had presidents and candidates that have certainly appealed to a white nationalist mentality in this country. When you get the whole salad of, and by the way, sorry for using that word when I'm talking about Stormy Daniels, but when you get, I'm sorry, that was, thank you, Rob. Thank you for saving me on that. I appreciate that.
I prefer jelly. Anyway.
There you go. That's Chris Rock. Great Chris Rock. That's just, by the way, that is officially as naughty as we have gotten. And we won't get much naughtier than
no.
that. The whole combo of stuff is what gets me. I resent more the lack of intellectual engagement in the office, where he doesn't pay attention to what the advisors
well,
say.
Sure.
He doesn't pay attention. That's what pisses me off.
Sure. I mean, Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar. Donald Trump was not. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty clear. And I do think that there is a lack of intellectual curiosity with our commander in chief. And the chaos that he sows is so problematic. And when you say there's no accountability, I think there is. I think 2018 in these midterm elections, when you start to see, you know, state Senate seats going Democratic in special elections, congressional seats going Democratic in special elections, you start to see this wave. The generic ballot for Democrats is, I think, 15% that people would prefer Democrat over Republican. It might be as high as 20% in some surveys. That's all accountability to me, Mike. And I think that is where the energy is. It's among Democrats. The minority party generally has an advantage, you know, regardless of who the president
is in the midterm,
in the first midterm of a new presidency.
And then what happens after that? You know what the historical model is of that. The midterms normally swing with the party not in power. And then what happens historically?
President
gets
reelected.
The incumbent president gets,
sure.
he gets now, reelected.
Now
oh my God.
I happened to be at a coffee recently with a former George W. Bush staffer who said that, you know, he thinks the Dems get the House and they impeached Donald Trump. And I said, really? You think impeachment? And he said, what Democrat can vote against that? What Democrat can go back to their base and say, I think he should serve? And the question is, my question for that is on what grounds? But my point being, Mike, that there will be consequences, whether Donald Trump gets reelected or not, I don't know. But he only won by about 80,000 votes. So it's not as if he has this huge mandate. In fact, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. So
I'm speaking historically when I look at that. And,
sure.
and a lot of people talk about the fact that we'll have a huge Democratic victory in the midterms, and then it'll bounce back because the onus will be on the majority party that's in Congress, and you'll have.
But I don't know that I don't know that the Dems win the Senate. I don't. I mean, they got a tough map.
That's a very, very difficult capture for the Democrats. But it's just to me, I don't want to even look at it as a scorecard as much as the overall feeling. And I think this is on both sides of the aisle. I feel as though we are rudderless right now. I feel like we are lost. And with every single day, the chaos and the stories that hit. And I watched Sean Hannity last night, who was just gleefully listing the fake news items. I don't think, and I'll ask you this as a journalist, don't you think that you could go back through multiple administrations and make a list of items that journalists get wrong periodically? It happens, right? It happens in every administration. And to label it as some sort of conspiratorial fake news that's damaging as well. You have a guy like Sean Hannity on a major network now that I feel like I'm watching the Soviet news agency TASS. Because they literally, the president is in excellent health. There's nobody that's got better genes. I mean, it's just all this totalitarian dictator crap that I'm seeing. It's just making me sad. That's how I feel. I'm a sad person.
You're a saddie.
I'm a sad. I'm not sad about anything else in my life right now, but I get sad about the state of our administration and our country and what I'm seeing every single day.
And I agree with you 100% on the fake news and the fake mantra. In fact, Donald Trump, my former colleague Brian Stelter over at CNN, added it up. Donald Trump has called something fake 400 times since he took office. So at least once a day, whether it's fake news, fake polls, fake whatever you want to name it, he calls it fake. You see Jeff Flake take to the Senate floor this week. He makes the case that Donald Trump is talking very much like Stalin did when he talks about the press. You have John McCain in an op-ed in the Washington Post making the case that the president should stop talking about fake news because it is only emboldening dictators and tyrants in other countries who routinely murder, kill, jail journalists for doing their work. I think the fake news awards was almost fake news. Because they said they were going to do it, then we're not going to do it. Then they put some list on the RNC about stories that journalists had run corrections on, and that's the difference. It's
all
not,
out war on the press. It's not, all out war on the media right now.
And you know the White
a
House
free press.
Well, the White House likes to say they're in a war. When I talk to my friends in newsrooms across the country, they're not at war with the administration. They don't see it as a war. They see that they are doing their job. They are trying to uncover the truth, and if that upsets the president, if that upsets the White House, that's really not on them. But I do think it's problematic to call news that had to, like, that there was a correction or something was gotten wrong. It's not fake news if you correct it. When you find out that you made a mistake, we are transparent and say, we screwed that up. We apologize.
Fake is when you deny.
Exactly. So I do think it hurts journalism. I think that you have talked about how it's worrisome to you that there are so many enablers in the Republican Party. But when you look at guys like Jeff Flake, guys like John McCain, who
will not be in the Senate for very long, both one of them because of his health situation, and the other one because he's going to get primaried and he didn't want to deal with it, and so he's gone running. And the people that lingered, no one seems to really want to call out this president. That to me is a concern. It really is. You'd think we'd have more Republicans coming forward and speaking up about some of these circumstances. And I watched the director of Homeland Security on the Hill the other day, and she was stunning with her double speak and her word salad when she was asked about the issue of was S-hole said in the room. And you know what? It made me say to myself, I think really from this point forward, there ought to be tape on everything. There ought to be a recording device forever. And it stuns me that you get that many people in one room running the government and you don't have a recording device. And I want some guy to just show up with an iPhone and say, oh, by the way, I recorded it. I've got it right here. Because it's just the same dance, the same horrible, useless dance that we seem to be going through.
I mean, once you start recording it, it makes it difficult for people to have candid conversations.
Okay.
And in a lot of those meetings, President Obama, in a lot of those meetings, everybody had to put their phone in a basket before you went into the room for that very reason.
So it's SOP.
Right. The idea being like, look, if I know you're recording this and you're going to use it for partisan reasons, then like we're not going to have a real conversation.
Okay.
But I think it's pretty clear that he said, you know, S-hole or some version of that based on, you know, the contemporary accounting that came out from first the Washington Post and then was matched by almost every other news organization very quickly. And also, you know, we heard from, you know, your friend Lindsey Graham, you know, he told Tim Scott that he heard that. Then Tim Scott came out and said, you know, senator from South Carolina said, oh yeah, that's what Lindsey told me. Lindsey told me he heard it.
Was it true? What do you hear about the fact that he called around to various Republican donors or people that were associated with the Republican Party and he was bragging about it? That he actually used the word S-hole. That I mean, I that didn't really get much traction either with that. And it's it's stunning to me that it sounded to me like it took 2 or 3 days for the White House to get on top of this. And then once they realized, hey, we didn't, there are a couple of people saying they didn't hear it. We can actually go full denial. Yeah. And that's what became the norm.
Well, nobody went full denial.
Not initially, but afterwards there.
No. It wasn't full denial. It was tough talk, Mike. There was a lot of tough talk in that room. A lot of tough talk.
Yeah, right.
You know, so it wasn't, he didn't say it. It was a lot of tough talk.
Well, when I say full denial, I mentioned the president's tweet that Dick Durbin misrepresented my comments.
Right.
That's basically denying that he said that.
That was a question of did he say S-hole or S-place or
S-house.
S-house. Right, yeah. Right. It was S-house. That's what it was.
In the house. Oh, my God. The thing about Lindsey Graham, you wonder about, there's a guy that has butted heads with the president before, and of course there was a horrible tweet from Chelsea Handler that said, what do they have on Lindsey, where he came along with the president after a couple of golf matches. Did they have dirt on Lindsey? Lindsey Graham is someone who fascinates me, because I feel
But I just want to note that like we are quoting the author
Chelsea Handler.
Baca, can you hear me? It's me, Chelsea.
I know. I'm not saying what she said was legit. She was speculating. I look at Lindsey Graham, and I also know that on the Hill, there is, or there was, in the day, a lot of hanky-panky that goes on. And you wonder about...
Have you ever met Lindsey Graham? He's the most asexual man you will ever meet. I do not have a feeling that like if there's anybody who there's like
you don't think Lindsey Graham is having like parties with with the cast of Cats in his living room or anything like that, and they have videos that Trump said it would be very difficult, Lindsey, if we happened to leak this particular story to the press. A lot of people were wondering though.
I'm picturing Lindsey Graham in a leotard dancing to Memory. I mean, that's kind of what I'm thinking of there.
I just wonder why he changed it. Do you think he could have been influenced by congressmen and senators have been? Could he have been influenced by the power of the presidency? Is that why he sort of came along? Or was it simply the immigration situation where he thought he'd schmooze the president to, in a bipartisan way, get an immigration deal done?
Look,
what do you
think? So a couple of things
to take
apart there. There's always chatter. Lindsey Graham's a single guy on the Hill. There's always chatter about, well, what's his deal?
What's his deal?
But you know what? He's a single guy. He can have any deal he wants.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, Chris.
Oh, man.
That's like the old Seinfeld episode. Yeah, there we go.
There it is. So there's that. I got nothing on that.
That's our first stoppage in six shows. That's when it really happened with that. But yeah, I mean, the point I'm trying to make.
But do you think there's any truth to that whatsoever?
No,
that there would be dirt on Lindsey Graham. And I don't care whether it's men, women, farm animals. I'm just wondering, do you think there would be?
Well, farm animals seems a little much. But like, yes, I don't.
Lindsey. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what's happening there. I just wonder why he came, all of a sudden he seemed to be buddy-buddy with Trump. And it seemed
because
like it
happened he's a politician.
Okay.
And he gets it. Like, look, here's a guy. He's a professional politician. He's been in the Senate. He's been in the House. He ran for president against Donald Trump. Donald Trump gave out a cell phone number and he had to blow it up in a blender, you know, because so he understands how this works. He's now a Republican. There's a Republican president. He's going to try to make nice and get things done when he can. He took a lead on Obamacare. He was working with the White House to try to make that, you know, connection between Congress and the president, because the president doesn't know how to deal with Washington. He set himself up as a guy who could do the deal. He feels strongly on immigration. Now he's on the other side of it.
Your point is that he's been there all along, yes, and that this is not a major departure.
No, and he gets it. He is playing the game. Right now, him and the president are on the outs. They didn't talk since Saturday, Mike. And so, you know, there was a direct line there, and now they're a little bit on the outs because...
Well, they're on the outs because of the deal not getting done, and the fact that they brought the hardliners like Tom Cotton into this meeting,
right,
and that they were kind of blindsided.
Right, him and Dick Durbin and were working on an immigration fix.
Right.
Now, this immigration has bedeviled both Democrats and Republicans for years now. I mean, Kennedy and McCain tried to get it done, what, 10 years ago. It's a very difficult thing to get done. Donald Trump is not making it easier, and he is just playing the game. I think Lindsey Graham gets it.
Can you do me a favor, because you are smarter than I am, and I always acknowledge that. By the way, that's the contract we have, that I have to say that at least once during a show.
And it's not true.
Okay,
you're a very wizened man.
That's very nice of you. I have to, but I wrote. You hear a lot about DACA, and my knowledge of DACA, as far as I'm concerned, that's one of those houses in the countryside in Russia, right, where they all go to get in the sauna.
Nesting dolls.
DACA. Can you give us the crib note version, the generic version on what this immigration situation is all about? DACA has something to do with dreamers, correct?
It does.
I'm just not educated, and I'd like you to educate me and our audience about what this whole immigration thing is about.
So absolutely. So the immigration thing is a huge issue, but the one that has come to fore is DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. That's what it stands for. So President Obama made an executive order that said, look, if you came here and your parents immigrated to this country illegally and they are undocumented immigrants, but you came along with them, you weren't born here, because if you were born here, you're a citizen, but you came with them when you were a small child, well, you should be able to stay in this country because you grew up here. This is your country and you didn't have a choice about this. So they created a program where these kids could apply for visas to stay legally, and Donald Trump ended that program. And Donald Trump said, I think we need a legislative fix to this. I think President Obama went above his authority on this. I think Congress needs to legislate this, and we need a fix on that. And he said,
what's your opinion, Stormy? Do you think we should end this program? I think we should. Could you rub my feet, please? Thank you. I'm sorry. Of course he ended it. Of course. So that's one of the big things that's on the table right now.
So that's one of the big things on the table. And he sat down with Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, Nancy Pelosi, in the House and said, we can do a deal on this. We can do it at the end of the year. And then decided that he was going to take a harder line on it. And Democrats want that fix. Republicans, by and large, don't want that to be part of the conversation. And right now, it's part of the conversation because they need to continue to fund the government. It runs out of money at the end of this week. They're trying to figure out how to do that. And Democrats are holding together and will vote against continuing funding for the government if they don't get a fix that they want on immigration. That's what Durbin and Graham were trying to negotiate. They thought they had Trump on their side on this. Trump then brought in the hardliners. Things blew up. And now it's very messy.
As we tape this show on Thursday, January 18th, where does it stand right now? This is obviously a very fluid situation, and you never know. But, I mean, as we go to taping right now, there's still every possibility that the government's going to shut down, right?
There is every possibility that the government's going to shut down. The Republican leadership in the House wants to do another month-long fix where they say, let's fund some of the government for another month so we can continue having these negotiations over. Or the Dreamers, over, you know, some of the other military and domestic spending issues we have. And not only are Democrats taking a hard line against that, so are conservative Republicans in the House, the so-called House Freedom Caucus. And they are saying, look,
nice group of guys, really sweethearts, all of them, every single one of those guys, super kind, super kind. How old was the kid when he came to the country? He was two, sir. Kick him out. How old is he now? 23. Kick his ass out of here. That's what I think. Thank you, Freedom Caucus. We appreciate that. Yeah, let him go.
Now, for our listeners, that's not a direct quote.
I was just doing a little playlet. I was doing a little theater right there. I was like, man, how old was he? He's 18 months? Yeah, he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was thinking when he came over here. When he came, probably made one of those illegal border crossings. He probably drove the car his parents came across in Nogales. That's what happened. Yeah, kick him out. Freedom Caucus. I'm sorry. I'll behave myself.
So the Freedom Caucus doesn't really have, they certainly have some immigration concerns, but they also have concerns over the spending and whether they're going to blow up the spending caps on the government. And they also are holding fast because they're saying, what's going to change? Why do we keep kicking the can down the road and buying us another month? Let's figure this out and get to a solution. They would like to see the military funded for the next year in order to just pay for this 1 month extension. And the House is saying, well, no, we don't want to do that because we don't want to lose them when we need them on the next.
If you had a president with 15 to 20% more popularity in the polls, you probably would have a less unified front on the Democratic side. Wouldn't that be accurate?
Aren't they holding together because of the fact that
Democrats it's pretty easy to hold together against this guy?
No, Democrats are holding together because Republicans own everything, right? And if the government shuts down and we close the national parks and all of a sudden, you know, federal employees aren't getting their paychecks and, you know, what are we going to do with TSA? All of those things, that falls on Republicans. They run everything. Democrats can, with a straight face, say, that's not us. And they're forced, and that's the only leverage they have. The only leverage they have,
and they're using it.
Right. So, so I don't. Even if Trump had, you know, more approval rating, it might make it a little tougher. You might see a few more Democrats peel off, like guys like, in outside of Virginia, in places with big federal workers, they might peel off because they have to vote for this because of their constituencies, right? But by and large, they'll be against it, and I don't think it matters where Trump's approval rating is on this. It's more a leverage play for them. And not to mention, we don't know where the president is on this either. It's not like we have presidential leadership where he's saying, I want this, here's what it needs to be. He continues to move on this as well.
And
he came out just today saying he doesn't want they were going to fund child health care in this latest iteration. And he's saying, I don't think I want that. So that's a change of position as well.
And
this thing is so fluid that by the time somebody listens to this on Friday, it could be a completely different situation.
Well, the very latest is that he also ended the visa program, right, for Haitians. That was something that has been right up to the minute where he's eliminated that, where these workers can come in from Haiti. And it just the timing of this, the sensitivity to the S-hole controversy following that, you do it with a Haitian visa program. I just wonder ultimately where all this is going to shake loose. Everyone seems to agree on one thing. It's going to affect the midterms, and it's going to affect it in favor of the Democrats. And that's a given. Unless something incredibly dramatic were to happen, that's probably where we're going in 2018.
But if you look at his decision on the temporary status for the Haitians, they were granted that status after the earthquake. That status had run out. They were essentially overstaying their visas. He didn't renew
that
program.
That's what he's saying.
That's what happened. And that's what
fact. All right, and then I will accept your fact.
And that's what the law says. And he is essentially not waiving. He's not timing, waiving that law.
But the timing could not be worse. He could have done that a month down the road. He could have done that to all this. But, you know, it's, I mean, don't you think? Couldn't he have done that a little bit further down the road?
But
because the combination of this happening with, you know, right after making the, you know, specifically referencing a country like Haiti, it creates the impression that the president has something against, you know, African-Americans and Haitians. I mean, it's just...
Sure. I think the optics of it are not good for the White House. But when you look at the rule of law, what Trump's saying is, I'm not going to continue extending these things because they need to be sorted out by Congress. And they need, if we want to extend this, it should be done by law, not by executive order. So that's
All right. So I don't dispute your facts. What I say, though, is it seems to me when you're talking, 60 to 80 people coming into the country, it seems awfully bad timing for an administration that once again seems to be lost as far as how they get any kind of coherent message out. It seems like they are constantly thriving on this denial presidency where they can come out and say, he didn't do this, he didn't say this, he's not this guy. When it comes to being on message, it just seems to me with all the chaos that the effective leadership is what's lacking. They're not able to get the legislative initiatives that they want because they're just constantly putting out these brush fires. And it also, once again, makes me sad.
I absolutely agree with your analysis there. If they could use the power of the presidency to talk about infrastructure reform, to talk about funding the government and how they want to do that, that would be much more productive than talking about if the president said S-hole and did he have an affair with a porn star. I think that would be helpful to his agenda, Mike. I think you're right.
Well, before we get out of here, Chris, I do want to ask you one last time, though. With this incident that may or may not
which
be...
Which one?
Stormy Daniels. Which one? The one of the day. The porn star du jour. Mike, there she is. There it is. I have to ask one last time. Do you see, and I think I probably know what the answer is going to be, do you see this story gaining any more traction, doing any more damage, lasting any longer? That's the question to you, Mr. Freites.
I think if she comes out and speaks, it'll have a little bit more legs, but I don't think that this story is going to get the kind of saturation that the Michael Wolff book did or that the Access Hollywood did. I think it just becomes another data point, another way to run a campaign ad in 2020.
And and one last question to you would be, we missed one particular item this week that neither one of us brought to the table today, and that was the president's physical.
Yes.
His health checkup. What did we do?
I was going to ask you if you were satisfied. I mean, because the White House doctor came out and took like an unprecedented hour and a half question and answer where like he exhausted the reporters. They're like, all right, we got nothing else. You know, like that was the, okay, fine. He's all right. He took an acuity test. He's not insane.
It was a little more pointed than that. It was excellent. His health was excellent. He is the most excellent president. He is the excellent health, excellent blood pressure, excellent everything.
No,
excellent
it wasn't cholesterol. Excellent. No, his lipids were high. He's borderline obese.
Oh, my God, his lipids.
He's borderline obese. He needs more exercise. He needs to eat a little bit better. You know, like there was... I mean, he's not a picture of health. And then Dr. Sanjay Gupta, my old colleague on CNN, said, you know, he reads that medical report and says, like many men his age, he is probably suffering from heart disease, at which point the White House went like apoplectic. But
they got a little concerned about that. But based on that, I thought it would be just for our listeners, interesting for you. You don't have to reveal this. I'll be first. Maybe you can go next week. I wanted to share with our listening audience that I am 5'11". I am 5'11", and I currently weigh 158 pounds. That's my
Where does that put your BMI?
My BMI is 50. I don't even know what it, no, the body mass index. I know there's the number. They've squeezed me with the calipers. They weren't calipers. The last person that had the physical, they used the calipers with. They actually had to go into the back shed and get ice tongs when they came out and did me for that one. But you know, another week, another adventure. Yeah. Who knows what next week will bring, Chris Freites?
I couldn't have told you last week we'd be talking about porn stars, so we'll see what's going to happen next week.
That's another episode of Political Persuasions for Chris Freites. This is Mike O'Mara, and please pass along all the info about Political Persuasions to your friends if you're enjoying the show. A lot of you are listening more and more every week, and we want to get this show as much traction as we possibly can. We will see you next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Political Persuasions. If you have a comment or question for Political Persuasions, please send it to @Frates on Twitter. That's F-R-A-T-E-S. Thank you. You can download Political Persuasions on iTunes, MikeOMaraShow.com, Stitcher, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.